This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today with education. Governor Maura Healey is proposing big spending on pretty much all facets of education in her first budget, and it comes at an important time. So across the Commonwealth, our education systems were dramatically transformed by COVID-19, by the pandemic. Early childhood care centers closed. Students and teachers in K through 12 spent at least a year learning and teaching online. Colleges saw enrollment dips. All of these institutions remain in flux. And the new Secretary of Education, Patrick Tutwiler, has oversight on all of it. He's here in Studio 2 to discuss his work, his priorities, and his hopes for the future of education in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secretary, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so I want to have a little fun first, because in studying about you, I discovered that you have a real passion for barbecuing. Is this true?
This is accurate.
Okay, so I have to know the measure of hardcore. Have you cooked outside yet in 2023?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
What did you make? A brisket.
Oh, nice.
Yep, and it was good.
Awesome. And I understand one day you'd like to make a cookbook.
If someone will read it. If not, it will just be passed down to my children, and they will use it and hopefully get as good as I am now.
All right.
Some point.
So we have not cracked out the grill yet in 2023, and now I feel like we must not be serious.
Okay. That's all right.
All right. So listen, let's turn to the situation at hand. Sure. And I just want to start a little bit with your background. In education for more than 20 years, previously superintendent of the schools in Lynn, also in administrative positions in the Boston Public School. You were a history teacher at Brighton High School. In all of that, what do you find that now that you're in this Secretary of Education role, where's the place you go to in your head the most for resources, experience? What do you draw back on?
I actually go all the way back to the very beginning as a history teacher at Brighton High School. I think many leaders would agree with me that the magic is really in the classroom space. And so I can never forget that experience, and I bring it to bear on all of my thinking and decision-making. Brought it to my thinking when I was a principal, superintendent, and I absolutely will bring it to bear on my thinking as a superintendent, as a secretary as well.
So, you know, in taking the job, this is a big job. Mm-hmm. You were working at the Barr Foundation when you took the appointment. You have adolescent kids. There's a lot going on for education. What was it that made you say, I will walk away from where I am and I want to go take this on because I think I can do X?
Right. I think I can be part of the solution, right? As you mentioned in the outset, I've got 22 years of experience in the K-12 space and a diversity of spaces, frankly, in the K-12 experience. I've been in Wayland, I've been in Boston, I've been in Westford, and I've been in Lynn, and I've experienced a lot, I've seen a lot, and I've learned a lot. And I thought this was a unique opportunity to bring that learning, that experience to bear on some unique challenges in the current context.
So this question might sound obstreperous. I don't mean it to. I'm genuinely curious. Mm-hmm. Anytime somebody steps into a position like this, there's at least some sense, I could do it better than anyone else right now. So what is it that you think you can do to make a difference that comes from who you are, what you've done, how you've experienced the world?
I think I can frame the concerns in a way that maybe no one else can. I think I can use my experience, that credibility, to bring people together around the path forward in education in this state.
We're talking to the new Secretary of Education, Patrick Tutwiler, here in Studio 2. So I want to dive in now, this framing thing. That's the perfect segue, because in some of your first public remarks after you became secretary, you laid out a vision that was three concepts: stabilize, heal, and transform, which seems to me to say we are hurting and we need to change. Am I understanding those three words right from you?
You are. The stabilize and heal principles in that framing have to do with the fact that we are still in recovery. We are not out of the woods, so to speak. When we look at issues around mental health, around where students are in terms of skills and content knowledge, when we look at where we are in terms of openings, vacancies in the teaching space, we know that we still have a lot of work to do, and we needed organizing principles to frame our path forward, and those are the right ones.
So you just listed mental health and staffing, and in a minute, what I want to do, by the way, is go through, let's talk about early childhood education, let's talk K through 12, let's talk, higher ed. Are those the pain points? Mental health, staffing?
Those are the big ones, absolutely.
And there aren't any others. Those are the big two.
I don't think it's fair to say there aren't any others, but those are two significant things that really need our immediate attention in order to build to get to a place of addressing some of the other issues.
All right, so let's look at early childhood education. And I guess I'm assuming, all right, so you told lawmakers last week that the state needs to invest in some COVID-era programs or hundreds of providers could close. We're talking about the governor has a $1.5 billion roughly allocation for the Department of Early Education and Care. That's essentially to offset federal COVID funding. I'm assuming that in early ed, the pain point is staffing. Is that right?
It's staffing. It's sort of keeping their doors open, right? And to be clear, of that $1.5 billion, $475 million is allocated for what's become known as the Commonwealth Cares for Children or C3 grant, which providers use to sort of keep the lights on, pay operational costs, increase pay for staff, all of the things that would normally be deferred to families, the state is taking a bigger responsibility for.
So I want to ask about that specifically. Is it then the case that either A, we are simply at a point where the business model for early education and care doesn't work anymore and the government's going to have to pay for some of this period? Or B, we are not yet recovered from the pandemic and there is a runway, right? Or a landing strip that needs to be provided. Which is it?
I think it's A.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. You know, this is one of the sort of learnings from COVID is the state needs to take play a bigger role in supporting early education in the state. As we look nationally, Massachusetts ranks 43rd in terms of the level of funding for early education. And
you mean the level that the state puts into early education?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And that's not a place where we want to be. It's not about the rankings, but it is about how can we create a model that's sustainable, that allows for child care to be affordable in the state and for our providers to have everything they need to provide high quality services for kids.
So what the governor is proposing is roughly 25% more in state funding. Do you think that's sustainable? If the matter is states got to now pay for things that the state didn't used to pay for, mm-hmm. You're looking at $1.5 billion. That's about 25% more than before. That's just the shape of things to come?
I believe so. And keep in mind that there are new funding streams, revenue streams that will support that sort of shift going forward. And I'm talking about the Fair Share funding stream. In this particular budget, $100 million of the C3 grants is funded through Fair Share. There are other buckets, for lack of better expression, that the administration drew from to get us to that place. But I do think that, yes, it reflects a mindset shift. And there's a way to fund it going forward.
So just for listeners, Fair Share is the new ballot measure that was passed last year that that places a surcharge of additional taxes on people who earn more than $1 million. And those are earmarked for transportation and education.
Correct.
All right. So as we transition into K-12, Secretary Tutwiler, I am thinking about a simple question that one of our producers asked this morning. Listen, if we just paid teachers more in early education and care and in K-12, would most of these problems go away? Is this really just that we don't pay people enough?
I think that is not the be-all, end-all. Certainly, I would say as a former teacher, a principal superintendent, you know, we want to make sure that teachers are compensated, you know, have the resources that they need, have the supports that they need. I'm really committed to that. But at the same time, we know that there are other things that make teachers stay in place, that help them thrive in their work. It is not just as simple as raising pay and then all other issues fall by the wayside.
So name two things other than pay that keep people in place and help them thrive as educators.
I think their ability to feel success in their classrooms or you know, whatever role they're playing in a school is huge. And actually, this is a research-supported element that to the extent that teachers feel or educators feel that they are making a difference and can be successful because they have the supports and the resources to do their jobs well, that's huge, right, in terms of longevity and stay power. And then also having opportunities to learn and grow, right? Are there robust professional development opportunities, ways for people to continue to move forward in the profession? That's another big piece. It's not just pay alone.
Who's that teacher from K through 12 in your life that you still think about, that still, you know, sort of you carry in your heart?
Well, I'll start with the first teacher I had, which is my mother, who is also an educator, who I think reflected in her, in the way that she raised my brother and me, the kinds of things that you see in many classrooms, and I'm sure were present in her classrooms. Extraordinary care, right? Willing to go to the end of the earth for us. A willingness to keep learning and growing. My mother earned a doctorate at the University of Texas, a single parent, doing it all by herself, but felt like this was something she could achieve. And so set the standard high for my brother and me. No excuses. You can do this kind of thing. So first her, but then I would say also my kindergarten teacher, Miss Session at Booker T. Washington Elementary School in Champaign, Illinois. I have a fond recollection of my experience there. She was no nonsense. It was a warm and loving experience, but she really drew the best out of us. And I can't do it was never a statement that she would accept in her classroom. So my mind goes back to her as well.
So I want to talk about K through 12 now, and there are two things sort of heavily on my mind. One is learning loss. You know, the Educational Opportunity Project at Stanford says that on average during the pandemic, Massachusetts students lost 75% of a school year's worth of math, 41% of a school year's worth of reading. The other is mental health, where the CDC just came out in February with a report that said that 42% of high school students reported that they had persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Those two things together feel staggering. Mm-hmm. How on earth do you take all of that on in our public schools?
Mm-hmm. I think one step at a time, right? Prioritizing, in my view, first mental health, which schools across our state are doing really innovative and substantive things in that space. One such example is the implementation of the universal mental health screen. That means screening all of our students to get a sense of where they are, if they're experiencing mental health challenges, and then leveraging a multi-tiered system to meet their needs, whether it's doing something simple at the tier one space or something more concentrated and involved at a higher tier. That feels to me like an important thing for us to focus on. And in the governor's budget, there's an increase of $1 million to support districts in moving in this direction.
I'm going to stop you there.
Please.
Because that's important, but also $1 million isn't very much.
Mm-hmm. $1 million additional, right? So it's $2 million. And that's not to say this isn't supporting districts who are ready for that move. There are a whole host of other mental health strategies and supports that districts are leveraging. That's just one example of a robust way to move forward that the governor's first budget it shows an increase in.
And how about learning loss?
Learning loss is it's a challenge, right? And we know that, to your point, there are significant concerns with numeracy in the mathematics space and with literacy. I believe deeply in what the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has pushed forward as a path forward to addressing learning loss. It's through the acceleration agenda, which means helping teachers create a scenario in their classroom where they are teaching grade level material, but providing the appropriate scaffolds to allow students to reach that grade level material, except not going the direction of remediation, which is if you're in fourth grade teaching third grade material with hopes that the student will catch up. Exactly. That has been their approach. That's something that worked in New Orleans, after, devastation hit there, the acceleration approach showed real promise. And that's what's happening in our state right now and being pushed. We think that's going to show big returns.
We're talking with Secretary of Education Patrick Tutwiler. Before we let you go, I do want to talk for just a minute about higher ed. And I think the place to start is the governor would like to, wants to set aside $20 million from the state's 2024 budget to make community college free for residents older than 25. We know the legislature has expressed interest in maybe it's free for everybody. Mm-hmm. Can we really get to it being free for some X number of people? Can we really do that and sustain that?
I think so. What we've proposed in the first year, the $20 million for residents age 25 and above, we're expecting that 1,000 to 3,000 current community college students would be eligible for this benefit. An additional 5,000 to 6,000 we're predicting will take advantage of it. So approaching 10,000 in the first year. We're really excited about this. And as we visit community colleges across the state, we're hearing equal excitement both by staff and by prospective students as well. I think this is a place to start, right? And really sort of refine how we leverage this type of program before we move to the Free Community College for All.
Last question. Are you invited to like 700 graduations this year as Secretary of Education?
A lot of them. I'm a big person, but I can only be in one place at one time. but really enjoying getting out and connecting with students and with leaders and hearing their stories. And so I'll do as many as I can.
Will you come back and talk to us again?
Of course.
There's so much more to cover.
You invite me, I'll come.
Patrick Tutwiler is the new Secretary of Education. Secretary, thanks for taking some time out of your day.
Pleasure's mine.
Listening to that conversation, joining us now, Carrie Young, WBUR senior education reporter. She's been covering Tutwiler, the new administration's education priorities, and really all things education, joins us from Studio 2B. Carrie, let's just start with your reactions to what you heard.
Boy, we covered a lot of ground. I'm definitely impressed with just how much the secretary did have to say. I have to say one thing that stuck out to me in the conversation and that I've noticed in previous news stories that I've covered about him is just how much previous experience he has in schools, in the classroom.
And is that substantially different than we might have seen in the past?
It really was. I mean, the Secretary Tutwiler has 20 years experience in a school in the education realm. And previous administrations didn't have nearly that much. The exact number is not on off the top of my head, but you can really tell that you can really hear that experience come through. I mean, when you watch things like the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education meetings, it's like the State Board of Education. They make some larger policy decisions, and when they were making a decision recently about accountability and how long districts would have to catch up in academics, Secretary Tutwiler relied on experience he had while leading the schools in Lynn, saying, this is what I saw, this is what you guys really need to consider. And quite a few people on that board also don't have near the depth of experience he had in a classroom. So it made a big difference. And that was something that really, yeah, that popped into my head thinking, this is not something I've heard before.
Carrie, it struck me too, and I guess I'm checking this against your experience, right, that he was more open about the need to heal and stabilize, about the pain, the loss that students have experienced since the start of the pandemic than I am used to hearing from a public official. Is that just me, or did you notice that as well?
No, I've definitely noticed that as well, especially, I mean, I'm going to go back to the discussions around the accountability plan that the state was trying to come up with. It surprised me, quite frankly, to hear the State Department of Education and to hear the secretary talk about, like, listen, there are realities of what happened during the pandemic, the traumas that kids went through and the mental health struggles that they're still having, and that we need to keep those in account and have realistic goals here. And that definitely seems like a change. And to hear an administration talk that openly about it is very surprising.
We're debriefing our conversation with the new Secretary of Education here in Massachusetts with senior education reporter Carrie Young. I talked with Patrick Tutwiler about early ed. He was quite transparent that he believes the future of early education and care is going to require a kind of consistent state spending that we haven't done, that the business model doesn't work if the state doesn't spend money. Just react to that.
Yeah, I think I was surprised by that, too. I mean, I think that is a big statement to make, right, to say that, this is kind of a policy shift in terms of just how much the state is open to putting towards a service like this. There are different sides on just how much the state should be putting towards it. But, I mean, looking at Governor Healey's proposed budget, the 25%, I think, increase in early education and care is huge.
That's a big number.
It's huge, especially compared to, I mean, this was pre-pandemic and millionaire's tax. But there were times when the increase to the early education and care sector didn't even hit inflation. And so to see 25% is just like, that's like whiplash when I'm thinking back to that.
And Carrie, we talked about the governor's budget proposals, and several times Secretary Tutwiler drew on the new money that comes from the millionaire's tax, right? The over $1 million goes to education. The taxes on that go to education and transportation. Does the governor get to say that, or does the legislature have a say? Can she pick where the allocations come from, or is there a negotiation with the legislature on that, as there is on so much else when it comes to a state budget?
Well, with a state budget, everyone has to agree, is my understanding. And so right now, we're just hearing what Governor Healey's budget proposal is. And so I would imagine, you know, we'll have similar discussions with the House and Senate. So I think we need to wait and see a little bit. But just hearing the governor's priorities, there's going to be more, you know, negotiations to know where she stands and where a lot of that energy is going to go. I mean, I think that's important.
Couple other things I wanted to touch on with you, Carrie. One, the emphasis on mental health in K through 12, especially adolescents, which we're increasingly becoming aware of as a pretty urgent problem. And I will say, if you or a loved one is experiencing a mental health crisis, the Mental Health Crisis Hotline is available by phone or text 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that number is 988. Are you seeing kind of a consensus across people in the field of education that we've hit some kind of, I don't know if wall is the right word, Carrie, but you know what I mean, some kind of wall on adolescent mental health?
Right, that something needs to change kind of thing. I mean, I think the previous administration definitely did put a significant focus on mental health. It became very apparent during the pandemic that students were going to come back to school with a lot of trauma and needs to sort things out, especially to get back to, I don't know if baseline's the right word, but really to help them through the day and succeed in school, right? Pre-pandemic, I remember there were a handful of districts. I remember in Methuen, they were doing that universal mental health screening at throughout the district. That the secretary referred to. And so to me, it was just like, it was interesting to see that this might be something that all districts could be doing soon, rather than that just sort of handful, that coalition that was doing that before the pandemic.
So what are you watching for now, Carrie?
Well, I mean, I think I'm watching to see where a lot of this money ends up going once the budget becomes official. You know, I think I'm curious to see in years to come, maybe, where funding will go. You know, like, if Governor Healey's plans did come through, what did that result in, right? Like, did results improve academically and also when it comes to students' mental health? So, yeah, I'll be looking long term, I think, right now.
Watching the results.
Oh, yeah.
WBUR senior education reporter Carrie Young, as always, thank you.
Thanks for having me.